Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn. Coming up, the people of Guinea-Bissau vote in elections this weekend aimed at restoring democracy 2 years after a military coup. We hear from our correspondent in the capital.
When we talk with people on the streets, there are concerns about the period after the elections. People are worried about the armed forces' behavior.
And in Zimbabwe, the opposition MDC, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, has expelled its treasurer. We'll be taking a look at the party's inner workings.
All factions of the MDC, at the end of the day, they owe their being to Tsvangirai, and Tsvangirai keeps their oxygen going.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
The people of Guinea-Bissau will be going to the polls on Sunday in long-delayed parliamentary and presidential elections aimed at returning the country to democratic governance. Guinea-Bissau, which has a history of political instability, was plunged into chaos by a military coup 2 years ago. In a moment, we'll be talking to DW's correspondent in the capital, Bissau. But first, the head of DW's Portuguese service, Johannes Beck, fills us in on the key players and issues dominating the election campaign. His report has been adapted for Africa Link by Assumpta Latus.
Expectations are high in Guinea-Bissau as the nation of 1.7 million people prepare to go to the polls this Sunday. Since the country became independent 40 years ago, no elected leader has ever completed his presidential term. José Mário Vaz, Paulo Gomes, Nuno Nabian and Abel Inkada are the front runners in Sunday's long-awaited elections in Guinea-Bissau. Current interim president Manuel Sarifo Namajo and former prime minister Carlos Gomes Junior are not running. The absence of prominent candidates has resulted in splits within the country's two main political camps. Two candidates come from the former independence movement, now the country's largest political party, PAIGC. The party's official candidate, José Mário Vaz, who was finance minister until the 2012 coup, claims victory will be theirs.
We will win the parliamentary and presidential elections. Our top priorities are strengthening the economy, creating jobs, and finally getting the economy back on its feet.
José Mário Vaz is hoping to reap dividends from the positive records of the pre-coup government, which boasted a robust economy and under which salaries were paid regularly. However, Vaz faces accusations of having misappropriated financial aid funds while in office. He says the charges are politically motivated. Another candidate from the PAGC party is Paulo Gomes, who is running as an independent candidate. He says his credentials are his biggest advantage.
I am a technocrat, and although I have never played an active role in politics, but I have the advantage of knowing my country's economy really well. I have a wide range of local and international experience, which is an important requisite for a head of the state in opening the country's doors and market abroad. This will make the country to garner the most needed multilateral and bilateral aid.
Gomes studied at Harvard University in the U.S. and has worked with the World Bank and the African Development Bank. More than four candidates have entered the race from the Party of Social Renewal, PRS. The strongest of the four is said to be Nuno Nabian. Nabian is the candidate closest to the military. Most of the military come from the Balanta ethnic group, which makes up about one-third of the population. Traditionally, they vote for the PRS. Asked by DW whether a reform of the military and its leadership were necessary, Nabiam had this to say.
I believe a reform of the security sector is really necessary, but it must be well thought through. If there's a real need for reform, this must first be discussed.
Campaigning has been largely peaceful. International observers from the African Union, East Timor and New Zealand will monitor the vote counting. While the first round of voting will determine the composition of parliament, none of the 13 presidential candidates is expected to win the absolute majority needed for victory. The two front runners will battle it out in a runoff.
That report was written by Johannes Bech. Marcio Pessoa is a correspondent for DW's Portuguese service in Guinea-Bissau. On the line to the capital Bissau, I asked him what the mood was like on the eve of this weekend poll.
Yeah, in this last day of campaign, it was not registered serious conflicts between political parties, supporters that could disturb the electoral process. Of course, when we talk with people on the streets, there are concerns about the period after the elections. People are worried about the armed forces' behavior after the results be released.
What were the main campaign issues?
So the main campaign issues are actually the work, the trade, and many, and even the security forces as well.
How well organized are these elections?
So if we compare with other elections, we have less organizational problems until this moment. According to National Elections Commission, more than 775,000 voters are allowed to participate on the election day on Sunday. We have observed some organizational problems concerning the material distribution and media registration, but nothing that can really break the process. Many people come from abroad to vote, but have not been registered, and they will be not able to participate. This material distribution problem happens here in the capital, Bissau, and the National Elections Commission is using the next two last days to solve the problem.
How important are these elections for the future of Guinea-Bissau?
These elections are crucial. I think this is a good opportunity for Guinea-Bissau to show to the international community that the state is again unified after the crisis.
Marcio Pessoa in Bissau.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
Rwanda has ended a first week of remembrance for the victims of the genocide which shattered the country 20 years ago. Back in 1994, some 800,000 minority Tutsis and moderate Hutus were massacred by Hutu extremists within the space of 100 days. We now look at the role played by the Rwandan media in the atrocities, in particular Radio RTLM. From Kigali, Flora Kaitezi reports.
Radio Television Libre de Mille Collines, or the Free Radio and Television of a Thousand Hills, RTLM. This radio is believed to have played a key role in the 1994 genocide by broadcasting hate propaganda. But genocide survivors and historians note that anti-Tutsi articles and graphic cartoons had started appearing in newspapers way back in 1990. Kasim Yusuf, a veteran journalist in Rwanda, told me Radio RTLM began broadcasting by the end of 1993.
Radio RTLM was used to incite Rwandans into believing that a section of the population was not Rwandan. They would say there are cockroaches and the cockroaches are Tutsi. They would tell people that the Tutsis hate Rwanda. There was no friendship between Hutus and Tutsis, and any Hutu with a Tutsi wife had gone against the core principles of the Hutu. This is the kind of hate speech propagated on this RTLM.
The radio station was quite popular due to the fact that it played a wide range of contemporary music, including rock and roll, pop, and Congolese music popularly known as Lingala. However, it incited deep hatred and encouraged violence against Tutsis and against moderate Hutus who supported the peace accord, a deal between the Hutu-led government and rebels, which was at the time under negotiation in neighboring Tanzania. As Yusuf explains, the radio went a step further and started mentioning names of would-be targets.
Yes, it happened. There were two announcers who liked to mention people's names. They would mention a certain family and say Tutsi cockroaches lived there. As soon as you heard your name, you had to do everything possible to run for your life. either leave Kigali or flee the country. There were many grenades here in Kigali, possessed by the militia, and when they heard your name, they would attack you with the grenades or beat you to death.
RTLM continued to broadcast until around July of 1994, and when the RPF army advanced and took control of the country, most of the hate radio staff took mobile equipment and fled to the then Zaire, now Democratic Republic of Congo. After the genocide ended, journalists like John Gakuba and many others who had fled the country returned, only to discover the damage done by radio stations like RTLM was still fresh in the minds of people.
Actually, people were discouraged completely. They could not even listen to what we are. Some even said we are not even happy of what you journalists are talking. They said we are talking nonsense because you just motivated killers to wipe us out. So they are not trusting media at all.
The Rwanda National Anti-Genocide Commission estimates that nearly 50,000 Tutsis were killed as a result of the RTLM broadcasts. In 2003, life sentences were requested for the RTLM leaders Ferdinand Ndahimana and Jean Bosco Barayagwiza for incitement to genocide.
Flora Kaitese reporting.
Human rights.
The U.S. State Department has reaffirmed Washington's intention to impose targeted sanctions on those involved in the four-month conflict in South Sudan. President Barack Obama signed a decree earlier this month authorizing the seizure of assets and visa bans directed against anyone in South Sudan deemed to be threatening peace efforts, targeting UN peacekeeping forces, or violating human rights. The conflict in South Sudan has left thousands dead and forced close to a million to flee their homes. Some of those refugees fled across the border to Ethiopia, where they face difficult and sometimes tragic conditions, as Coletta Wanjoe reports.
This is a cry of pain from a South Sudanese family inside an Ethiopian refugee camp located near the Ethiopian border with South Sudan. The family has just witnessed the death of their six-month-old baby. They told me they had walked for 25 days as they fled the ongoing conflict in South Sudan. On arrival, their baby was pronounced dead. She succumbed to acute malnutrition. Refugees are facing appalling conditions in the camps. The overcrowded tents are filled mostly with women, children and old men. Most of them are in tattered clothes and walk bare feet. Their only belongings is the little they could manage to carry as they walked for days to escape the violence in the world's youngest nation. Newly arrived refugees are usually allocated individual makeshift tents that only have a roof. To keep away the cold, especially at night, the refugees fasten blankets and pieces of cloth on the big tent. They sleep on the ground. Since the rainy season has started, the ground is wet and muddy, but this is all the refugees have for now. Bol Gadkoth was an officer dealing with child soldiers before the ongoing conflict displaced him. He says this is the second time for him to be a refugee. The first time he spent close to 10 years in a camp during the civil war between North and South Sudan. Despite the hardships, Bol remains optimistic.
I don't want to be in a refugee camp for 2 years. Even 1 year, I don't like it. I want to go back within, like pure men.
Peter G.H. Ruach was an officer of parliamentary affairs in Malakal, one of the regional states of South Sudan. However, together with his five family members, they were forced to flee and walk for 9 days to the refugee camps. Interestingly, he used to live abroad and had just returned to start life in his native land.
I like my country. That's I myself. I came from America. I've been there for 19 years. It's better to your different country. It's better your country. That's why I come back.
Ethiopia is hosting over 80,000 South Sudan refugees. However, the numbers are steadily increasing as an estimated 1,200 refugees arrive daily. A camp that could host 25,000 refugees is now holding 40,000. Antonio Guterres, the High Commissioner of the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, who recently visited the camps, said the South Sudan situation was dire. He He also noted that the crisis needs a long-term solution.
Even if we do everything we can, even if we provide the best possible assistance, this is not the solution. We don't want to see the South Sudanese again for many years remaining in exile in these countries. Peace is an absolute must.
But until peace returns to South Sudan, these refugee camps, despite their harsh conditions, are the only safest place these South Sudanese refugees know.
Coletta Wanjoe reporting from Ethiopia, close to the border with South Sudan. Zimbabwe's opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, or MDC, has expelled its treasurer, Elton Mangoma, because he had called on party leader Morgan Tsvangirai to resign. In an open letter released in January, Mangoma argued that Tsvangirai had failed to push through reforms while participating in a power-sharing government with President Robert Mugabe. Thomas Deva is an independent Zimbabwean political analyst. I asked him why the treasurer had been forced out of the party.
The first thing that the world needs to know is MDC has a tradition of expelling any dissidents. And Elton Mangoma is not the first and will not be the last. You need to look at why the political party is called MDCT, which is quite a big anomaly because the T stands for the name of the party leader, Tsvangirai. So in terms of democratization, it shows that Tsvangirai the man, Tsvangirai the founder of the political party, and Tsvangirai the leader of the then government of national unity as prime minister, sees himself first and foremost as the party. And unfortunately, there are people around him who also believe that Tsvangirai is the party leader. And to a great extent, they do not hesitate to tell anyone who challenges them to either go and form their party, which explains why there's an MDC and MDC Ncube, which explains like people like Job Sikala, who also founding members, went out and had their own political party.
Could the MDC have pushed through reforms when in government with ZANU-PF? Were there opportunities for the MDC to assert itself which were allowed to slip by?
There is no doubt that all of us will argue that the MDC went to sleep. They enjoyed the sweetness of power and forgot the project they had put themselves as key executors. So equally, even Mangoma failed. So he should not turn around and say the leader is the one we need to push the blame on. They should all be accountable because he was part of the executive within the MDC. He was a minister, and he knows very well that all of them went to sleep on the job and did not do what they were supposed to do. The MDC under Tsvangirai were some of the people who were unwilling to go for elections when Mugabe called for elections. So it is very clear that as the people of Zimbabwe who were expecting much from that political party, all of us will agree with Mangoma. It's just the timing of his critique which made him unpopular with certain sections of the Zimbabwean population, notably those within the MDC.
How secure is Morgan Tsvangirai's hold on the party leadership?
To be honest with you, he's very secure. There will be these challenges. Take Morgan Tsvangirai away from the MDC, it's dead. That's my own view. And you can equally see the people who are challenging him come from very strong financial constituencies to the extent that if they wanted to form their own party, they could do it without Morgan. But the reality is that there are so many people who would keep Morgan in leadership and they would not care a moment when these other people are expelled. So it is very clear the MDC is currently constituted. All factions of the MDC, at the end of the day, they owe their being to Tsvangirai, and Tsvangirai keeps their oxygen going.
You say that the MDC has a history of expelling people. Could these expulsions, though, backfire on Morgan Tsvangirai?
The record, as it shown, is that they've actually recovered much, much better than what we thought. So, for example, the Professor Walshman Ncube, who leads allegedly an MDC that is strong in Matabeleland, was completely wiped out, and the MDCT made better gains in that area. So it is very clear that given that history and where we are looking at, Tsvangirai will say, I can expel and still continue. That sort of gives him the confidence to continue with the expulsions.
Thomas Deva.
USA.
And time now to hear what you, the listener, have to say about the stories we've been covering over the last few days, both here on Africa Link and on our website, dw.de/Africa. Aboubakar Jolou joined me in the studio shortly before we went on the air.
Did the international community fail Rwanda? That was a question we posed to our Facebook followers after an article by our very own Andrea Schmidt.
DW's Andrea Schmidt wrote in an opinion article that the international community did not only fail disastrously to avert the genocide at the time, but has also worked only half-heartedly in the meantime to prevent similar atrocities from occurring again. Do you agree?
Yes, said Fabrice Kiganga. And even now, things are not going well in Rwanda. How? Take a moment and think about the people still living in refugee camps like Zadleka in Malawi and Togongara in Zimbabwe. What about us, Congolese? Dino Lucido said, the international community has failed the Palestinians as well. Vanda Souza said, I think so. Unfortunately, the same is happening right now in Syria. Similar to that article was another piece on foreign relations to Africa, and specifically is the United States' renewed Africa interest. That article also sparked another polarized debate.
Polarized in what sense?
Polarized in the sense that you could put the argument in two basic points of view. Many argue that the increased presence of the US in Africa is to counter Chinese activities there. And others say the US presence in Africa is to bring stability to countries in crisis.
Good to hear that Deutsche Welle can provide a platform for such debate.
Well, Germany has actually increased its presence in Africa as well. This is a tug of war that is not limited between China and the US anymore.
So Europe is much more of an active player in Africa than it used to be.
Indeed. Anyways, these are some of the comments on our Facebook page. Peter Hahnemann said, the USA wants to counter the Chinese engagement in Africa. This is the next field of confrontation between the superpowers. Azam Somro said, the attention and interest of the world powers have increased because of the natural resources of the African continent. George Eislink, the world is so armed and dangerous than any time in human history because Russia, China and USA are interfering and selling nuclear weapons, especially to Africa. Natasha Zulu said, only Angela Merkel understands and wants Africa to grow. 80% of the population in Africa is made up of young people. We need guidance to rule ourselves and not weapons to kill ourselves. America and Europe are giving us weapons, whereas China is giving us tools to rule ourselves, and America does not like that. Angela Bustanero said, you should look more intensely at the deals your government make with the Chinese, not to mention the aid your continent receives from America and Europe. Natasha Zulu, commenting on aid our continent, said, we don't want aid. We want tools to help young people to know how to fish and not to learn how to beg. That's all from me. Over to you, Mark.
Many thanks, Aboubakar. And if you'd like to comment on anything you heard on Africa Link or read about on our website, dw.de/Africa, then do get in touch. You can send a text message to country code 49 160 957 5950 and email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. And your say will, of course, be back at the same time next week. And before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. This weekend, the people of Guinea-Bissau are set to vote in long-awaited elections aimed at restoring democracy to the country 2 years after a military coup. We've also been hearing about the plight of South Sudanese refugees in Ethiopia and finding out why Zimbabwe's Movement for Democratic Change has expelled its treasurer. I'll be back again with another edition of Africa Link on Monday. Do join me if you can. In the meantime, have a pleasant weekend and thank you for listening. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.